I did this quilting of foam, and that quilting of foam expands when you put yourself in it, but it gives it that nice texture and weight underneath the latex canvas.
That's so much detail.
Amazing.
I can't believe it came together.
Yeah, well, we didn't have a ton of time, so we're really like, oh my God.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Art of Costume Podcast. I'm Elizabeth Joy Glass.
And I'm a TVA agent, Spencer Williams.
Oh, hey, Spencer. How's it going?
Good. Elizabeth, how are you?
Oh, you know, I'm just...
living the dream.
Living the dream. Living that post-project, let's clean up our lives.
Yeah.
Now
oh,
that we have time
gosh.
To concentrate.
Elizabeth... our wonderful theater costume designer that is a part of the staff here sent me some pictures from her recent production, and the costumes look absolutely phenomenal. Elizabeth, congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm dying. I wish I could be there to see it. It'd be so fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. Some things that I wanted to come together really came together. Some things didn't, but we worked with it. It all worked out. And
looked
yeah,
awesome.
It was so
and there
much
was
fun.
So many costumes too.
It was
a lot more than I expected, and so much detail.
Yeah, for the ensemble, we rented costumes, which that was a whole experience within itself.
Yeah. Well, all these years of listening to other people's processes probably paid off in the end.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. Actually, it did. It did. Definitely did.
Well, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And I'm excited to see what's next because this is really cool. I'm in love with
it. Me too. Me too. How are you? How's your post-college life going?
It's good. We were just talking behind the scenes. I still feel like I haven't come down from it. You know, I'm just like constantly anxious or stressed about things that don't exist anymore. So I'm just walking around looking for something to do. I've had to be talked off the ledge of just jumping right into a master's or a PhD. Just, you know,
don't do it.
I just need something to fill my time. So I guess for all the listeners, be afraid. I'm probably going to come out with like a Naked and Afraid podcast soon to like take my mind off things. Cause you know,
as long as you don't sign up for it, it's all good.
I was looking yesterday. The link's right on the website.
Okay. Well. We should go on The Amazing Race. You should.
That would be fun. And you don't have to be naked for that one.
No.
Right?
No. And you can eat food that you didn't scavenge yourself.
They cook it for you, perhaps.
Perhaps, yeah.
I think that would be my hard thing on Naked and Afraid is I'm not good at cooking. So... well, actually, maybe this is easier because all I have to do is put on a fire and take it off. I could do that.
You're a good cook. I just don't know if you're a good wilderness cook.
When have I ever cooked for you?
I've been at your home and eaten things. Now that I'm looking back at it, I don't know if you ever made any of it.
I probably ordered out when Elizabeth didn't realize it, and I just took it out of a box and put it on a plate and said, bon appetit.
That, like, is tracking.
Yeah. And, like, this was crazy.
I definitely just threw my mind back to be like, you've definitely, and I just did not come up with anything.
I definitely cooked for myself when we were roommates.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't
you
afford to eat out every day.
Down.
That's true. And I can't say the same for all of us.
True.
Oh, a random side topic I wanted to bring up. You know how we always talk about, you know, we listen to other podcasts.
Yeah.
And they don't always have to do with costume design because there's only so many hours in a day that I could dedicate myself to talking about costumes. So I have a new favorite podcast called I've Had It with Jennifer Welch and Angie Pump Sullivan. And it's two ladies who just air grievances for 45 minutes. It's perfect. But why bring it up is because I was listening to it. And at the beginning of every episode, do you know what they do, Elizabeth?
What do they do?
They start with a clap so that their editor could get their podcast in sync.
Like
the
recording. Snaps.
Like our snaps. I thought that was something Daniel came up with. And I was like, oh, other people do this too. We're industry standard.
Yeah.
Except every time you and I do a snap to align our vocal tracks, we struggle with our snaps like we have arthritis or something.
I just think it speaks to our level of athleticism.
But why don't we just clap?
You know, we could definitely do that from here on out. I don't think Daniel cares.
I just felt like this is official business I had to bring up because they clapped and I was like, oh, I could clap. Why do we sit here and try to snap? And it usually takes us several tries.
That's what he told us to do. I'm just following instructions.
Daniel, please put this on the meeting notes. I would like to talk about a official clap. And we don't need to even... The audience doesn't need to hear our claps, but just know every week after week, we sit here and really try to get our snaps down. And it's just, for what?
All right. That's on the next meeting agenda, Spencer. Yeah. We'll talk about it.
Oh, man. Speaking of all this corporate meeting agendas, the TVA had quite a agenda to get through in season 2 of Loki.
Oh, yes, they did. They had to change that agenda a couple of times. Talk about some just like world shattering information they received on a almost daily basis there.
Yeah, I mean, at least a weekly basis, episodically. Elizabeth, this week we are talking about Loki once again, but this time we're getting into season 2.
Yes.
And I love Loki. This is such a good show.
It was so good. I don't know. I haven't heard anything about a season 3. And if there's not a season 3, they like wrapped it up perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be
content with it.
It was a really nice little like, here is the end of Loki with a nice little bow on it. Although the other day I was thinking like it'd be really cool if somehow like Thor dropped into the TVA.
Right.
And like just the shock on his face. I think that Loki like gave up his life to like literally save the universe and the timelines.
Yeah.
That would rock him.
I agree with you. I mean, spoiler alert, by the way, for this point forward.
Yeah.
But you guys knew what you signed up for. But I feel like it's rare when shows actually like go out on a high and know when to end.
Yeah.
So that being said, I don't want Loki to end, but if it did, I would know that it went out on a high.
Yeah. Yeah.
That being said, I still want more.
Yeah. But
they could take the time.
I agree. Or I could like, even if like just like the story of Loki like weaves back into whatever Thor movies are on the horizon, like I would take that as well.
Yeah, because Thor also needs a good ending.
Yeah.
Story wise, because I don't think everyone was content with the last one. I thought it was fun.
Oh, I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We
but
won't
it's
get
definitely
into that,
it's definitely
though.
Not an ending though.
It's not an ending. But yeah, this is going to be an exciting episode because we have a special guest. But before we get into it, perhaps I will give us a little summary to catch you all up on what the God of Mischief has been up to.
Yes.
In Loki season 2, in the aftermath of the shocking battle for the soul of the Time Variance Authority, Loki, along with Mobius, Hunter B-15, and a team of new and returning characters, navigates an ever-expanding and increasingly dangerous multiverse in search of Sylvie, Judge Renslayer, Miss Minutes, and a truth of what it means to possess free will and glorious purpose.
That was a great summary, Spencer.
Wow, thank you. I might have had a little bit of help, but I made some tweaks, so it sounds cool.
It sounds very cool. And with that, let's go behind the costumes. We have series creator Michael Waldron and costume designer Christine Wada. She has literally had a job in every part of the costume department, but you will know her from Bridesmaids, for which she got a Costume Designer Guild nomination, 21 and over, Constantine, Pixels, Altered Carbon, Zombieland Double Tap, Our Flag Means Death Season 1, and the first season of Loki, for which she got an Emmy and Costume Designer Guild nomination, and has been nominated for another Costume Designer Guild Award for Season 2.
Yeah, Christine Wada is killing it, and I'm just such a fan of her work. She's so cool. She has such a unique style that she brings to all these projects. I mean, we've talked about Our Flag Means Death. That was such a brilliant show.
Good. Yeah.
I haven't seen season 2 yet, but the first season that she designed the costumes for were fantastic.
So cool. Yeah. Yeah, I am so excited. I'm even more excited to be able to talk to her because I feel like in our first episode with the first season of Loki, we were like trying to dig up like all her interviews, getting into it, and like just kind of being like, oh, like, I wonder why she did XYZ. And now we get to ask her. I love it.
Yeah. I remember when we did the first, I don't even know if that was season 1 or season 2 of our podcast. But when we talked about the first season, I remember we were like, gosh, we really want to talk to Christine Wada. And when we put on our calendar, like of like people we want to talk to, it just at the top, it just said Christine Wada for like 2 years. It just highlighted like, must make this happen. And this year it just... just got an email and then it happened. And now
we did it.
Good old friends. And you're all about to hear that conversation. Because she came and talked to us about season 2 and it was worth the wait.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody, enjoy our interview with Christine Wada.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
I am so excited. Elizabeth and I have been dying for this interview for a while now. We are so excited to be joined by Loki costume designer Christine Wada. Hey, Christine.
Hello. Hi. Hi, everybody.
Hi. We're so excited to finally have you. We've been talking about your work for a while. We love the first season. We love the second season even more. So we're just so excited for you to finally be here because we have tons of questions. So I hope you're ready.
Very ready. Bring it on.
Okay. Well, you've now done 2 seasons of Loki. It's arguably one of the more popular, beloved Marvel Studios shows, I would say. So I kind of want to return to beginning. What was it like stepping into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, especially working with such a beloved, already established character?
I'd say a bit of both. The challenge is extraordinary, and it's rare to come across a project where you do get to be challenged on so many different levels, both, you know, within an existing character, but then being kind of given this scope to do, expand it and do and play in that arena and kind of and grow it, right? So it really was daunting because I didn't necessarily have a huge, this was my first Marvel project. So I felt that I had to do a very big deep dive into the whole Marvel universe. And as soon as I did, I realized that like, it really gave me the foundation because there's so much there. It really gave me the sort of encyclopedia to come up with so many fresh ideas for Loki, right?
Right.
So, and the script itself really did lend us a hand in terms of where, not only like where we could go, but where we needed to sort of stay together as in terms of production design, hair design, all of it. There was also a certain structure that we created right from the get-go of the show.
So exciting.
Really is. And one of the things I love is that Loki plays with like a lot of different periods and universes, but a lot of the series takes place at the extremely charming TVA, which in a way kind of defines the show's tone. Can you share what your research and inspiration looked like?
Oh, yes. And well, to start that off, for a fun fact, when we all were hired, the department heads, it was interesting that a lot of our research was very similar. And we had, I had referenced Brazil a lot. And there were keywords in the script, which was Blade Runner meets Mad Men. So there was already a nod to pushing us into that direction of that mid-century tone. But I'd say that Brazil was a massive influence. We had a Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy was in there. We had, what else did I feel like it was? A lot of architectural references were on my boards, like brutalist architecture, a little bit of mod. I mean, I personally like to pull from art as well. So there's definitely some pop art in there. And there's a great book called Populux. So there I had a lot of sort of color references from that book. I mean, it goes on and on.
I mean, it's so funny. It's like a show about the multiverse, right? But there's so many different references that you're now able to pull in it too. It kind of works hand in hand.
It does. Well, but it also was really important to keep it everything somewhat grounded in recognizable and real world references so that the show kept a timeless element to it and didn't take it so far out of that space. So I think a lot of the references were important because they kept us grounded in some sense of like what is real and what is functional and what in a very analog way.
Oh, interesting. So Loki is, of course, about our favorite god of mischief, played by Tom Hiddleston, who we're big fans of. He was also a producer on a series. So we wanted to ask you a little bit, like, what was the collaboration like between you and Tom in creating costumes for this character? Someone that, you know, he's played for quite a while now.
Well, you start these projects with Tom bringing the encyclopedia of Loki to the table, which is incredibly helpful because he's vetted every aspect of that character and the costumes and the arc of those costumes. So even though we really never did the super suit on him, it was just a helpful guide to even this mid-century look, because I think he brings to the table an elegance and a very rock and roll elegant edge to everything. And I think he collaborates in that he knows how to wear clothes and he knows how to work the costume. He's a true actor who's completely in his body and is a physical actor. So when you give him the tools of a costume, he actually really knows how to use them. And I would say that that is such a gift to work with an actor who collaborates to that full extent, not really so much on the front end of the research, but on the production end and then taking it even further. It really helps to make what we were speaking about before, the idea that the clothes are also functional. It helps to take that to the next level. Like, you know, he'll pop his collar, the way he uses his pockets, the way he adjusts his tie. Those are all small but really big things that you want to think about when you're designing for Tom, and he really brings it all to life.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny to say that. Like, even the way he puts his hands in his pockets is also just like very Loki. He just knows how to wear and use these clothes to help tell the story of this character.
Yes,
which also was a challenge for you too, I would assume, because we see a whole new side to Loki in this series. He's, you know, he's still that god character, but like you said, we don't really see him in a super suit this time. It's a whole different Loki. So he lost armor. What was your concept behind Loki's costumes throughout the series? Just his principal look we see him in with all of his beautiful tailored suits and the rolled up sleeves.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting doing a season two because I've never done a season two before. So you have this immediate urge to want to outdo yourself. And then you realize that, no, you're telling a story. And this is a character that's the audience is very attached to. And Tom has definitely got us to a certain place in season one. So it quickly became apparent that we needed to keep that sort of common thread through season two and that sort of let him live in that TVA type world for a little bit. And even in coming up with the pea coat, I think it had to feel like something that the god Loki might have sort of conjured up, but in his version of TVA uniform. So with just a little more moxie and somewhat of his super suit in a way. It's a suit and it's armor in its own way, right?
That's a fun way to look at it.
Right. Yeah. But without being something that takes him out of the TVA organization and the friends that he loved, because you really want to feel that he is making a mortal connection to these friends. So his clothes still need to feel mortal through the middle part of that. The series, I think. And then it allows for for where we end up.
Right.
One thing I've loved watching this series is I can tell how much you love fabrics, textiles, and colors. What role does that play in your process?
You are spot on. It's a huge part of figuring out the tone of a show and keeping it. The way that a fabric catches light, absorbs light, all of those things are still part of how how a character comes across and whether something feels, by the way, also whether it can be aged appropriately, and aging is very important to me. So in the beginning, it's all about color and fabrics for me. It's where a lot of the designs launch from, and what the fabric can do, like how can it be shaped? How can it be destructed? How can it be dyed? How can it be manipulated? I also just like the history of fabric. I love that the TVA suiting that Mobius and Loki are wearing is a mid-century fabric, a mid-century sharkskin mohair suiting. I love that. The audience might not know it, but I think it just resonates for the actors to know that they really are wearing something that is authentic to that period. I think it subliminally affects you, and it definitely affects you in how you move. So fabric choices to me aren't just always visual. They're also how they might either constrict an actor or let them be free of movement, or how they might flow behind them or around them. So yeah, it's all extremely important. And the color palette was an interesting place to get to on this show, because originally it was hard to convince the powers to be that to go with brown, because it's not necessarily a very, it's not necessarily a typical sci-fi color.
Yeah.
Right.
But looking at research from that period and kind of getting into that late 50s, early 60s, and those browns and those olives and those mustards and those oranges, and looking at Kazra's beautiful production design, it felt right. And it felt that the TVA employees needed to feel anonymous in that environment. So color became, that color choice became a big fighting point for me, because I thought it really lended itself to that, autonomy of the TVA.
Wow, that's so cool. I mean, it makes so much sense, especially with the brown. It just really makes them feel part of the uniform, the uniformity of the TVA. It's really interesting. Going into season two, one of our favorite characters is, of course, Sylvie, and she undergoes quite a significant development in this season. So how did you approach designing her costume to reflect her evolving character and journey, considering that she's starting to blend into society a little bit more, but there's still an armor to her as well, though?
Yes. I mean, I'd say it's like a reluctant armor. I think that I think I wanted to show that she had carried that armor with her, but that it had gone through many iterations on its way there. So, and just things that were sort of a nod to the 80s and also just destruction. Like we kind of ripped the whole thing apart and reassembled it and stitched it back together, just so it felt like maybe in some rampage, she destroyed it and then realized she needed it again. And the coat was, I really wanted to find something that still moved and felt heroic, but was 80s. And in the 80s, there was this kind of throwback to like houndstooth and the rockabilly world a little bit. So instead of having to go to those big exaggerated shoulders and get really jokey 80s, I tried to keep it within the Sylvie colors, and I went more towards those, that 80s rockabilly look for her. And it also just let the coat have enough swing to it so that it gave her more of a heightened performance when she was doing any fights or stuff like that.
Right. I really love that costume, because I went to the Loki fan premiere and getting to see it up close in person, just seeing like the destruction, like the breakdown of it. She clearly, you know, really, this was her favorite outfit, and you could just see all the little details and the breakdown of it all. It's definitely one of my favorite costumes.
Did the I'm curious if the acid wash jeans registered. I mean, I think that it was a little hard to see, because there were going to be moments in the series where we would see more of those, and we sort of never got there.
Right. But yeah. I don't know. I definitely see the silhouette of it. I think it does. It's just also like the TVA is so dark too, you know?
Yeah.
So it does like blend in with, like you said, the uniformity of the TVA. But seeing, we're all looking at pictures right now, the audience can't see, and I could see it in this light.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting to me. It could bore you, but when we decided to go with acid wash pants, and I realized that I need to make multiples, like 10 pairs for stunts and stuff, you can't make matching multiples of acid wash. So we ended up having to print acid wash, and we cut the pattern and we printed the acid wash on the pattern pieces, and then we put the pants together so that it all so all the different pairs of pants matched.
Right. I can assure you that this does not bore us. We are the nerds that live for these sorts of details. So
yeah. I mean, I thought
there was also bobby pins on it too, I believe, on the armor.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Lots of good detail. speaking of detail, Elizabeth.
This episode is so wild. So the third episode of season two has Loki and Morbius jumping into Chicago's World Fair in 1893. And suddenly it's just this incredible period piece, yet the costumes still have hints of their characters and personal styles. How did you pull this episode together?
Wow. Well,
where do we begin?
I know, where do we begin? I mean, I'll just go all the way back to the beginning that for sure it was like we treated the TVA. I really wanted it to feel as believable as possible, as real as possible, so that it didn't turn into goofy time traveling. Mm-hmm. But I think that what pulled it all together for me was figuring out the palette and the fabrics, like we were talking about before, and just keeping the palette really restricted, almost as if you were looking at a colorized black and white photo. Because I think in my mind, when I look at period, if I conjure up a period that wasn't like in this century, I sort of see them in black and white. So, or like colorized black and white. And I thought it would just really lend itself to seamlessly transition from the TVA, because it psychologically wouldn't be so jolting, like in terms of a color palette and being a very like, restricted again. I thought it should be restricted again as the TVA was. So, and then finding like Tom and Mobius's fabric was, and even, Renslayer's fabric.
Oh yeah.
So difficult, believe it or not, and to dye that amount of yardage and Tom's suit, you quickly would test the different greens and you would see how it could pop too much and would just feel too vibrant, and just trying to get all these mid ranges. And there's something interesting to me about how those time periods where people didn't have as much choice is shadows the TVA. It's like this inability to have much choice. And in the 1890s, you can really see it when you do the research that people didn't have a lot of choice. So all the silhouettes really the same. A lot of the colors are really the same. There just isn't as much choice. And I really kind of wanted that to come across in the civilians. I also was interested in class structure in at the World's Fair, because we were in the Midway, and the Midway did have a lot of different classes were actually allowed in the Midway. So, and the TVA was structured the same way. I was really trying to figure out ranking within the TVA.
Oh man, it's such a beautiful episode. I remember when a trailer came out, Elizabeth and I were texting each other like, this is the year we talked to Christine. We just have to. Hey. It just came out. I love the idea that it's like looking at a black and white picture, just, you know, in color. It just felt so real. It didn't feel like campy time travel, which is what made it so enjoyable.
I know. It was very tricky to figure that out through the whole season. We were just because I don't think that I feel like Loki is special in the sense that it still is pretty grounded as a show. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. So season two introduced Obi, played by the incredible Kiwi Kwan. His character is a master of technology and definitely fits into the TVA of it all. This costume feels a bit unique compared to all the other TVA employees we see. He has his own thing going on. So we want to talk to you about Obi and what he has going on.
Oh, I know. I love Key. So it really came from we're in the lower section of the TVA now. And there was this sense that the lower levels should be backdated a little bit more from the upper levels of the TVA. So
that makes sense. Came up,
right. Yeah. So it was a conscious choice to introduce a new palette a little bit. Of course, there's always the base of the brown, but adding in the mint and the greens to really establish a different level. And as we were speaking about before, this sort of hierarchy system. So his jumpsuit, his boiler suit is really based off of a 1940s boiler suit. And that's, you see like the buckle on the back and all the, so zipper, it's buttons. And the fabric is herringbone fabric, which a lot of those old boiler suits were made out of, that twill, that herringbone twill. And the patches were, I will say, Key had a lot to say about wanting some patches.
of course.
But it was tricky to not get it, not have it look too campy as well, or cutesy, because he brings so much character to that, to the, his performance is so sweet. And so lovable that you almost just need, you could, we had to take a lot of patches off of it, essentially, because it sort of became too much quickly.
Right. And also, I think there's an underlying idea too, like, you know, it goes without saying, we love Kiwi Kwan, and going all the way back to the Goonies, where he also plays another technology type character. So you don't want to like lean too close to that either. You know, it wants to feel individual and unique.
Absolutely. Yep. I mean, I kind of am sad that we didn't get to see the tie from the flashback more, from him back in time more, because we based that in a 1940s tie. And I loved designing that. It's really, I love those 1940s ties, but you don't really get to see it very much.
Well, you could always just send pictures to me and Elizabeth in our emails, yeah, and we'll look at them with you.
Okay.
So when I was at Comic-Con this year, I got to see the TVA spacesuit.
Oh,
well, I don't know if spacesuit's the right word for it, but the TVA big suit. I'll call it a spacesuit for just this podcast. And I was blown away by the construction of it. And it actually reminded me of another favorite costume of mine from the 1979 Alien, where they kind of do like this big samurai type inspired a spacesuit. I was just really fascinated by this construction. So I'd love for you to be able to talk about this suit. It is so interesting to look at.
Oh my God. I'm glad you got to see it up close, because I think the texture of it was a success. Getting to the volume, I mean, it was very difficult. And working with a shop that is incredibly talented in-house, but very used to doing the slim super suits. So trying to convince your specialty shop to do this scale and make something so awkward, and to also go against everything that you generally want to do in a, say, superhero suit, which is make it functional, make it so they can do stunts. I just wanted this to be as awkward and uncomfortable to wear as possible without them suffering, right? Which is a big deal, because I care a lot about the actors being able to be comfortable heat wise so, and weight wise. So I mean, I think we probably went through like 20 versions to try to get it up to this size, but really the clincher was I knew I wanted to make it modular, because that way in between takes, they could cool off. So the scale of the chest, we just weren't getting there without it collapsing. And I just remember standing with this costume for hours, and also it clicked that if I made that armhole, the ring, really big, and I made it something that could swivel off, so that we could take it off between takes so they could cool off through that, it would actually allow me to get the circumference of the suit, and it would hold the circumference in shape and keep that volume. So I think that was a real turning point in figuring out the construction of this costume. And there are these consensual rings inside of the legs and the sleeves to keep everything expanded and cylindrical in it, because you know, really, when you move an arm or a leg, things want to collapse in when they're that size.
Seems like an impossible challenge, but you pulled it off.
It's so funny because so many people have asked me if it was all CGI in the show.
What?
And it was actually almost all practical. And that was the aim of the show, first and second season, is to try to do as much in camera as possible. So there's actually the aged suit. We did an aged one. That's real aging in the show. And it's predominantly the suit itself. And the fabric, the reason it has kind of that density to it, I found these great 1950s scuba suits where they do this quilting. They did this quilting of foam, and that quilting of foam expands when you put yourself in it. And so these are all on little 8x12 looms. It's quilted in this channel quilting, but it gives it that nice texture and weight underneath the latexed canvas.
That's so much
That's
detail.
That's amazing.
I can't believe it came together.
We didn't have a ton of time. So we were really like, oh my God. Yeah.
How many do you think there were?
We only could make five.
Really. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Because I kept turning it to spaghetti, I'm guessing. So.
Yeah. One, two, three, four. Yeah, five. Yep. So there was a hero one that was not spaghettified. And then there was a spaghetti semi on its way to being spaghetti suit. So.
Oh, wow.
That's incredible. Oh, what was also incredible was the finale for Loki called Glorious Purpose. Incredible. It ends with this really beautiful scene of Loki taking charge of his life and destiny, which in turn saves the lives of his friends. And his costume returns to this godlike form that we've seen before. Could you tell us a little bit about this look?
Yes. Well, fun fact is that the cape was one of the first samples I tried on Tom, like months and months and months before we started shooting, because I wanted to know how he felt about something very flowy and organic. And I wanted to see how he would move in it. And he instantly was attached to that feeling of something. Because you've always seen Loki previously very armored up. So there was a intent here. My intent was to have it feel humble and to have it feel godly, but humble. The crown, somewhat of a burden. I think organic is just probably the best word for it. And it was interesting when he put that, back to the cape, it's like when he put that on, it just instantly made him move differently. I mean, it was a little somber, right? There was something a little somber about it.
And it gave you all an endpoint too. You knew where you were working toward too.
Yeah. And we tried so many other versions of a cape, by the way, so many different things, but, the front of that is actually quilted and then has like little embroidery points on it, like a king's cape, because I did want there to be a little bit of a nod to a king. It was, those horns were no joke. They're huge and they were really hard to keep on. But the other practical part of that cape is that because it goes over the front of his shoulders. A lot of what you see in the final show is the actual cape in the wind, which rarely happens because usually capes spin in the wind and it has to get CG'd. So I think part of what feels so genuine about that final sequence is that we actually really do get to see this organic movement of fabric. It isn't just a computer generated thing. And I think it really fits for this humbling God moment.
Right.
And the shoes were an interesting thing too, just to keep it, like to see skin, I thought would be kind of important, like to show a little bit of vulnerability and to make sure that we didn't get into the God of armor and we got into the God of like humble purpose.
I love that. Looking back on Loki and all of the love from the fans who continue to discover and rewatch the series, I'm about to go rewatch it. What does this mean? What does this series mean to you?
Wow. I just think it was one of the best journeys, both collaboratively, creatively. I'm so inspired. It made me so reinvigorated about costumes and what we can do and how it can be this incredible, like you're never done learning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wish that I could just always work with this team. I wish we could, but I wish we could just take on new challenges all the time because I think it taught me that with the right people, you know, you can really tell a story, care about the content and care about how it looks and care about characters and also have some glamour and glitz. I think it's like really a perfect converging of time and talents. It makes sense for the show. It really does. It really, I think there was a moment in the show where we all just knew we were doing something special. First season.
Yeah. I mean, it's beautiful. It's definitely one of, if not my favorite Marvel series, and it's just beautiful. And that's over. I kind of, you know, still, I haven't fully accepted that's over. I'm hoping maybe we get something again in the future. But for now, I'm just excited that we get to just rewatch a show. And it's just so fun to watch. And a lot of that is due to your and your team's incredible costumes. So thank you so much for talking to us about them. And congratulations on the CDGA nomination, too.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So well deserved. Before we let you go, though, we asked you behind the scenes if we could ask this one question, too. We are also big fans of your work on Our Flag Means Death. We did a podcast about it. Gosh, what was it, Elizabeth? Like 2-3 years ago when the first season came out.
Yeah.
And we thought no one was going to listen to this episode. And we got so much like love for that episode. So now that you're here, would you just mind saying a few words about your experience with everyone's favorite pirate romance?
Oh my God. I mean, that was such, first of all, it was a whirlwind because it was so many costumes to do in such a compressed amount of time. And the turnover in that is so different than doing, say, Loki, right? Like you're doing a new episode every 10 days. And but it was kind of the perfect marrying of research for me because I do kind of have a East Village history. So it was like 80s East Village, a lot of my references were from like the music scene and the art scene and the world of the, you know, 80s East Village mixed with pirates. And it was like, just go for it, Christine, just go for it and be anachronistic and be playful and have fun. And I mean, working with Taika is a dream, you know, I mean, so funny. And well, the whole cast was impeccable. I mean, and I really love playing with the idea of like, how do you not have it look like Pirates of the Caribbean? And like how you talked about palette before, like really figuring out like what colors how I could make it colorful without it feeling too like sitcom, too much like a sitcom.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's just like, it's really similar to Loki, where it's, if you just create this world and you do your research, it's like, it's really easy to just start designing because you know exactly like, okay, these are my reference points. Like in Loki, it's like, it's kind of mid-century meets Brazil or Blade Runner. And this, it was like, it's like pirates meets the East Village in the 80s, right? Like, and
I love that so much.
So as soon as things came up, I could just sort of, I knew exactly where I wanted to go. I was like, oh, I want to look up Patti Smith. Oh, I want to look up, you know, it's just really, or maybe it was Prince, or maybe it's, it was just very fluid from there, and I could design on the fly. And I, you know, I mean, that's that leather suit for Taika. I only have one fitting on it for him.
Wow.
And that was it.
So wow, that fits like a glove too.
That was a win. Yes. And I think
that was my favorite costume from the episode, if I remember. Mm-hmm. That was my one costume rule of them all. It's so good.
Yeah. I think people are petitioning to bring it back.
They are, yes, yeah.
And right? This isn't that episode for that, but I will caution everyone to please fill out that petition as well, because I would like to bring it back. Costume designer Christine Wada, thank you so much for joining us. This has been such a joy. We're big fans, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. This has been so much fun.
Thank you, you guys. I'm so glad you love the show. Shows.
Yeah. Thank you, Christine.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Dan, audio engineer of the podcast, here to let you know that if you wanted to support the show, you can head over to theartofcostume.com/podstore. There you can buy some awesome TeePublic merch with the podcast logo, such as a shirt, coffee mug, stickers, and of course, a baby onesie. Thanks for all your support.
Christine Wada is so dope.
It was so good. I especially loved when she talked about the big suit to go into the time stream like that. The fact that that's a real just thing that exists in the world. Like,
I had such a good time talking about Sylvie's look. And of course, I mean, talking about working with Tom Hiddleston, but then just talking about the whole Chicago World Fair episode, it's such a masterpiece. And the fact that they just had to like throw in this basically brilliant period film in the midst of this season.
Yeah.
It's just such an incredible feat. And I could listen to Christine talk forever. Actually, since that little interview, I ran into her in public like 2-3 times. And she's so cool. I've gone to hang out for quite a little bit. And yeah, I'm just so thankful she came and talked to us. And I'm looking forward to perhaps the next time. We might have some ideas for the future. So we'll see.
Yeah, so exciting. But with all that, Spencer, I don't know about you, but I think we should play our favorite game.
I'm ready, kind of. No, I'm ready.
Yeah?
Let's do it.
Yeah? All right, hit it, Daniel.
The one costume to rule them all.
Spencer, what's your one costume to rule them all?
So, okay. My one costume to rule them all, I have to say, is probably going to be Sylvie's look throughout season 2. Just with like the armor underneath, but she has that great coat on top of it. And I think I brought this up in the interview, but I saw it in person at the premiere At the El Capitan Theater, seeing it up and close, you could see like lots of bobby pins in it and just kind of like you could see the wear and tear on it. But mm-hmm. she still has such like a cool kind of like grunge aesthetic to it. It's really quite a fascinating piece. And I just thought it was really cool. I wish it got more screen time actually in the series, or at least more up close screen time. But it's really such a great look. But I mean, I feel like I have lots of honorable mentions this episode, like the finale look of Loki, and also just the entire world fair is my honorable mention. Really,
I will second that. That is the honorable mention of the Art of Costume podcast.
We just signed it off.
Episode.
It's official. No arguments.
No. I love this for your choice, because put this in like a darker green or a black, and I could see you just like walking around LA like that. Spencer.
Absolutely. I also love that she has like two whole outfits. She just knows what she looks good in, and that's what she's gonna wear.
Oh, yeah.
Because that looks badass. What was your one costume to rule them all?
Oh, my one costume to rule them all was Loki's final look.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was so cool, like, especially, like, the way it, like, like, fluttered in the wind and, like, was, like, whipping around him, like, the horn crown, which I'm like, this is, like, the ultimate version of every like horned crown he has had up to this point, because he's had several. And it was just like, it was just so cool the way it worked with the environment he was put in and like the special effects. I was like, this is just like a tiny little masterpiece. And then he sits in the chair and the way it just like all like falls around him, I was like, yeah, this is Loki to the max.
Yeah, it's so cool. And it was such a good moment for like everyone who's been watching Loki since, gosh, I don't even know how long we've been with this character at this point that Tom Hiddleston's been playing.
Long and
it
time.
Was just such a great moment. And I love that as he becomes this, you know, god with his, you know, ultimate glorious purpose, I almost feel like his costume kind of harkens back to like the actual mythology of Odin as well, too. And that really translates into him as he sits down on this throne or chair. It's just such a great costume. I like, you know, you could pick several costumes from this season to be one costume rule them all, and you would be right. And this is definitely one of them.
Absolutely. And if you would all like to tell us your one costume to rule them all, you can definitely leave us a little voicemail at 626-515-1826 or email us at theartofcostume@gmail.com. Spencer, what's next week?
Our next episode, we are going to a very familiar space for us since almost the beginning of our podcast. Actually, I don't remember season one, but definitely since season two.
Yeah.
For every May, we have been talking about a Star Wars film. Mm-hmm. And to conclude our original trilogy, our next episode is about Star Wars Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
And I'm so excited because each of these episodes have been so much fun. You have so many behind the costume facts for these. So I'm ready to go. So it's gonna be a great episode. I'm very much looking forward. I think this is probably my favorite Star Wars film. No, I think I said that last year about Empire Strikes Back though, so I don't know. They're all great.
They're all great. It's definitely up there, and I am just so excited to dive back into the Star Wars world and talk about this. Again, like when you talk about iconic films like Star Wars, every single one is iconic. So it's just fun to like explore and dive into them.
Yeah, I'm so excited. And with that, if you would like a little bit more, if you're not done with Loki, you're like, I want to listen to this episode again, might I suggest that on YouTube, every Wednesday, the day after episode's release, we post that episode on YouTube. So you could watch along with some visuals, see a cute little picture of Elizabeth and I and our special guest. You'll go to youtube.com/@theartofcostume. And don't forget to also follow us on Instagram @theartofcostumepod. TikTok @theartofcostume. Hoping that TikTok doesn't get banned soon, because that'd be really sad.
Oh, but yeah.
Let's make it worth it while it's still out there. Please follow us. And don't forget to head to our merch store. It's starting to get hot outside. I will always admit that I don't know how to dress when it starts getting hot. So I think what we should all do is head to theartofcostume.com/podstore. Get ourselves some podcast t-shirts. That'll help complete your wardrobe for the summer. And as always, please, 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 please give us a great rating on Spotify and or leave us a 5-star text review on Apple Podcasts, because it really does help.
It
also makes us smile. And it what's does. Better than that?
Yeah. just hop on. If you love us, just hop on. Right. Few sentences.
Right. Just like a nice warm hug. Or if you want to tell me off, please do so. Just make sure you leave a 5-star review.
Yeah.
Like that's fine too. Because that also makes me smile.
5 stars and say whatever you want. We've been told we have Kardashian like voices. So you can
I just read that review this morning and it made me bust up laughing again. Thank you. That was really sweet of you, but that was not a 5-star review. So if they could go back and edit their hate complaint with 5 stars, I'd very much appreciate it.
Yes, yes. Everybody, have a fantastic week, and we will see you shortly.
May the force be with you.
And you as well, Spencer.
The Art of Costume podcast is hosted and produced by Elizabeth Joy Glass and Spencer Williams. Our audio engineering and editing is done by Dan White. Follow us on TikTok @TheArtOfCostume and Instagram @TheArtOfCostumePod. If you want to support the show, go to theartofcostume.com/podstore. For more podcast updates, costume reviews, deep dives, and interviews, go to theartofcostume.com, a blog dedicated to highlighting the best in costume design.